JC Corcoran Podcast.
Old Grandpa wore his suit and dinner nearly every day. No particular reason, he just dressed that way. Brown necktie and a matching vest, both his wingtip shoes. He built a closet on a high back porch, he put a penny in a burned out fuse. Grandpa was a carpenter, he built houses, stores, and banks. He chain smoked Camel cigarettes and hammered nails and planks. He was level on a level, he shaved even every door, and voted for Eisenhower, cause Lincoln won the war. Well, he used to sing me Blood on the Saddle and rock me on his knee and let me listen to the radio before we got TV. Well, he'd drive to church on Sunday and he'd take me with him too. Stained glass in every window, hearing aids in every pew. Grandpa was a carpenter, he built houses, stores, and banks. Chain smoked Camel cigarettes and hammered nails and planks. He was level on a level, shaved even every door, and voted for Eisenhower, cause Lincoln won the war. Now my grandma was a teacher, went to school in Bowling Green, traded in a milking cow for a Singer sewing machine. Well, she called her husband Mister, and she walked real tall and proud, and used to buy me comic books after Grandpa died. Grandpa was a carpenter, he built houses, stores, and banks. Chain smoked Camel cigarettes and hammered nails and planks. He was level on a level, shaved even every door, and voted for Eisenhower, cause Lincoln won the war.
No, I'm just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous, don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest disc jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over.
Friday, April 29th, 2022, 202 days remaining in our American democratic system as we have known it. How you doing, kids? I'm going to call this the weekend edition of the J.C. Corcoran podcast here at jcontheline.com. Why am I doing that? We're going long today. I can guarantee you that. And we're going to do something a little different here today because, as you know, I was pretty stunned by what I saw last Friday night on Real Time with Bill Maher. And maybe to you, it's not that big a deal. But I think I'm going to lay out a scenario here that shows you that it's perhaps a bigger deal than you think. And if you're a fan of Bill Maher, or if you were a fan and he lost you somewhere along the line, especially over the course of the last year or so, I think you're really going to find this interesting. So we'll get to all that in just a little while. I don't know why Nolan Arenado got suspended. I don't understand that. No Mets got suspended. And I think it's possible that Nolan Arenado just might be taking the fall from Major League Baseball in an attempt to punish the Cardinals for hitting five Mets in a three-game series. He played last night, by the way. He's going to appeal the whole thing. In showbiz news, James Corden leaving the Late Late Show after one more year. Says his family is homesick. That's a pretty coveted spot, and I'm already wondering about the speculation. It'll run rampant here over the next couple of days and weeks as to who might get a crack at that show. Pretty obvious, though, they're going young. I think James Corden was something like 25 when he took that show over. Got a couple of new shows. Showtime on Sunday night at 7:30, the series premiere of I Love That For You. It's a sitcom with Vanessa Bayer, who is really funny, by the way, as a cancer survivor who lies about it, coming back to hold on to her dream job at the Home Shopping Network. Molly Shannon, also from Saturday Night Live, is it? And I'm going to give that a shot. The big story, of course, is Welcome Home Nikki Glaser, who returns home to St. Louis in the series premiere of her show. That's going to be back-to-back premiere episodes from 9 till 10 o'clock on E! That is Sunday night. New album from Ann Wilson released today. It's called Fierce Bliss. There's a new Mike Myers comedy called The Pentaferet. It hits Netflix on May 5th. It's pretty nuts. I looked at the trailer. It's pretty nuts. Schitt's Creek moving from Netflix to Hulu on October 3rd. Birthdays this weekend. Today, Uma Thurman, 52. Andre Agassi, 52. Eve Plum, that would be Jan from the Brady Bunch, 64. Michelle Pfeiffer, 64. Daniel Day-Lewis, six-time Oscar nominee, three-time winner. He's 65. Jerry Seinfeld, 68. Willie Nelson, 89. Birthdays on Saturday. Gal Gadot, she is Wonder Woman, 37. Kirsten Dunst, 40. Johnny Galecki from Big Bang, 47. Burt Young, Rocky's no good brother-in-law, Paulie in the Rocky movies, he's 82. Jamie Dornan from 50 Shades of Grey turns 40 on Sunday. Wes Anderson, the amazing director and writer of Rushmore, The Royal Tenenbaums, stuff like that, 53. Tim McGraw, 55. Today is the 12th anniversary of the St. Louis hailstorm. Back in 2012, I was on the phone. It was probably about 3:30 in the afternoon, and the heavens just opened. It was unbelievable. I've never been in anything like that in my life. It got me a new roof, I'll say that. I was living in Olivet. Tomorrow, Saturday, the anniversary of the 2007 death of Cards pitcher John Hancock out on 40. Paul McCartney played Busch Stadium on tomorrow's date in 1993. On Sunday, it's the anniversary of Mitchell, McCain, and Buttery. And if that means nothing to you, you have forgotten that after I left Casey late in 1986, they brought in three clown asses from Atlanta. That didn't go so well. I got fired from my first job as a professional broadcaster, my first job out of college, on Sunday's date, April 1st, 1976, Rockford, Illinois. WYFE. I kept waiting for them to say April Fools, and they never did. And I started a new job on Sunday's date back in 1982, down the hall from Howard Stern at DC 101.
The A-List Interview with JC and the Morning Show, Graham.
My old pal and the king of all media, Howard Stern.
You know, here comes Howard.
Howard, come here.
Howard, sit down. How you doing?
Now I'm in St. Louis, Robin. Oh, we live on the air?
Yeah, we are. Yeah.
Okay, I'm in St. Louis now. Robin, this is the radio station that got cited by the FCC, too. JC knows this. I believe what they're getting cited for by the FCC, they deserve to be punished by the FCC.
Howard says to me, he looks at the story and goes, now see, he gives me a big smile and says, now see, I wouldn't have done that.
No, here's the deal, Robin. We got on the air and we made some vague references to genitals and stuff, and we're cited by the FCC. So then these guys get on and start reading directly from, what was it, Playboy?
From Playboy. Yeah. We read your friend Jessica Hahn. We read the interview.
Yeah. And you had to read every dirty word that was in the magazine.
We didn't. There were no dirty words.
Yeah, but did you guys read about certain acts?
Yes, we did.
And what's the dirty word? But you guys went way too far. I didn't. You guys did. And that's all I'm going to say about it. Good night.
Please stay out of St. Louis. I got a wife and a kid now, okay?
JC, I'm coming for you, baby.
All right, let's deal with this Bill Maher thing. Of course, another edition of Real Time tonight on HBO. You have to understand something. Bill Maher and I go all the way back to 1985. I worked with him at the Westport Playhouse then. I must have had him on the air a dozen times over the course of the last 20 years. Every couple of years, we have him on. And he's a lot like Bill Murray in that he is extremely moody. I've had Bill Maher on the air where he's been a prince and just like the nicest guy in the world and just laughing and having a good time and making sure that he gave me a really good interview. I've also had him where he's just been an insufferable prick. That goes all the way back to 1985. The difference between Bill Murray and Bill Maher, though, is if Bill Murray's in a bad mood, you walk in, you can tell he's in a bad mood. He's in a bad mood for the entire time you talk to him, and he's in a bad mood 4 hours later. With Bill Maher, you're talking to him, and he'll just turn on a dime. He'll turn on you right in the middle of a conversation. I've seen it happen, and he's almost done it to me a couple of times. So, you know, not everybody can be a really, really swell guy all the time. Dennis Miller was like that. There's something about the, you know, comedians because of the anger thing. People always question me about that. It's like, well, there is a lot of anger in comedy, good comedy. Even Rodney Dangerfield, for God's sakes. And I'll tell you, you can't get no respect. That's the problem. So, you know, it was make-believe. It was almost like cartoon anger. But it was still anger. Look at Louis Black. Louis Black goes on stage and just looks like he's going to have a stroke. I don't need to remind you about Sam Kinison and on and on. So the idea of anger in comedy shouldn't really surprise anybody, but for some reason, apparently, occasionally, it does. Now, there is one really seminal moment in my relationship with Bill Maher. And again, I've talked about the fact that I have one of my closest friends is a writer, a comedy writer. He was Conan O'Brien's monologue writer for 14 years. He wrote for David Letterman and actually created a character that was on the air from time to time, Dwight the Troubled Teen. He wrote for Jon Stewart on The Daily Show. And yes, for 1 year, he wrote for Bill Maher, and it was not a pleasant experience. I specifically remember a comment that he made to me once, and he said that Maher was always very, very mean to his writers, which is stupid when you think about it. That would be like, you know, I've always had producers for the show, and I treat them as well as I can because they're working their asses off. I demand a high level of performance, I guess you would say. I got high standards for the show, for the podcast, whatever, even though I'm doing this thing pretty much all by myself, in addition to assistance from some very, very good friends who have always contributed to the show and continue to do so. And then, of course, you've heard me mention the name Everett Marshall. He is the technical genius behind this whole thing. So I'm always as nice as I can be to these people, first of all, because my human nature is to be nice to somebody until they're not nice to me. You see me going to a Cardinal game, hey, JC, how you doing? I'm like, hey, how you doing? I might even come and talk to you if I'm not in a rush. And I'm always very gracious about signing autographs and taking selfies and everything like that. And then you get the guys you're walking by, hey, JC, you go, hey, how you doing? You go, hey, you suck. You go, fuck you. And I keep on going. So I'm nice to people until they give me some reason not to be nice to them. So anyhow, being mean to your writers, to me, is counterintuitive. It makes no sense. But anyhow, you'll recall about, 20 years ago, almost exactly 20 years ago, Bill Maher had a show on ABC called Politically Incorrect. It was a very popular show. I used to watch it all the time. I thought it was a great idea to get four people on the panel, oftentimes completely different walks of life. You might have, sitting in chair number one, a former attorney general of the United States, and in chair number four, directly across from him or her, a porn star. You put athletes in there, politicians, authors, comedians, music stars, and every night it was different. Every night it was different. So you got all these disparate points of view all crammed into a half an hour, and I thought the show was terrific. And of course, Bill Maher stepped on his dick after 9/11, made some comments that America was clearly not ready for, and some of America probably still not ready for them now, 20 years later, and they took him off the air. They threw him off the air. And it took a year or so, and then he ended up back on HBO with Real Time, and that show's been on the air for 20 years now, and it does very, very well. And as you know, I've been a big fan of the show, a proponent, play clips from the show all the time, talking about interesting things that happened, playing back really, really funny segments from the show or controversial moments. It's compelling television. That's what you're supposed to do. And if you're doing something that is of a political nature, you got to make it palatable for the American public, because at 9 o'clock Central Time on a Friday night, you could make a very strong argument for the idea that might be the worst possible time to be discussing politics. But the show does very well because it is politics, but it's really interesting and it's funny. And when you throw in humor to even the most serious topics, well, there you go. And it helps that he has babes on the show from time to time, or people who don't do a lot of television interviews. David Mamet was on about 3 weeks ago. How many times? I couldn't even remember what he looked like. It had been so long since David Mamet had been on television. I mean, he's the guy that wrote everything from About Last Night, the original one with Demi Moore and Rob Lowe. It was an offshoot of a play in Chicago called Sexual Perversion in Chicago. They changed the name to About Last Night. Yeah, it was some of his lighter stuff, but still tremendous moments about relationships. You know, the nitty-gritty of relationships, all the way up to things like Glengarry Glen Ross, which I have to tell you, I was honored. I got to pinch myself sometimes when I realize that I was on that movie junket in Los Angeles, and here I am sitting across from fucking Jack Lemmon and Al Pacino, Kevin Spacey. We didn't know he was a pervert at the time. And Ed Harris, who I think is one of the most underrated actors we have in this country right now. But I digress. Anyhow, back in those days, we're talking 20 years ago when Bill Maher's show was canceled from ABC, I had one of those big 10-foot satellite dishes in my backyard, and I had all of the illegal decoder chips and things that allowed me to see things that I was not supposed to be seeing. And when they took Bill Maher's show off the air, Channel 30 in St. Louis, I picked the show up off the satellite and frequently played clips from the show on our old morning show on K-Hits 96. And I made sure that he knew that. I made sure that he remembered that. And did he appreciate it? Well, all of this, with the cancellation of his show, happened right after 9/11. Fast forward now to 2012. And here's the tail end of an interview that you heard on the air 10 years ago.
Bill Maher, and of course, Real Time on HBO. And is there anything else you've got going on?
That's enough. It's been a busy year.
I agree. Yes. A little vacation time, a little something on the beach with no cell phones would be a good idea for you.
Well, that's not really a vacation. To me, the vacation, honestly, is taking a trip like this. As ridiculous as it sounds to some people, there's nothing I enjoy more. Except for the travel part, which is a drag. But once I get on the stage and I'm with all those people who want to laugh and I give them what they want, that to me is the greatest pleasure in the world.
Yeah, you might want to brush up on your Taekwondo or something, because we don't have to worry about the terrorists anymore. We have to worry about the crew on the planes.
Yeah. I read that, yes. Exactly.
Oh, God! So just be ready to jump somebody if you have to, All right, Bill Maher, can't wait for you to come here in St. Louis again Sunday, April 15th, Family Arena, St. Charles. Ticket information online. We'll give that to him in a couple of minutes. Bill, thank you again for spending a little time with us.
JC, thank you, and thanks for all your help all those years ago.
You bet. All right, thanks, Bill.
All right, bye-bye.
Now, I didn't play that for you because I'm trying to show off. I was playing that because it was important for you to understand how far we go back and the fact that we know each other. So for me to have a discussion like this, and we're going to get into some pretty evil shit here in just a couple of seconds, this is tough for me. I don't want to say it's heartbreaking, but it's a big, big disappointment for me. So this all goes back to last Friday night's edition of Real Time on HBO. And he's got two women on the panel. It was Caitlin Flanagan, who pretty much writes for The Atlantic. And I go back and forth on The Atlantic. I like some of the stuff they do, and then they'll turn around and go, what are you guys talking about? So they got that woman, and she wasn't much of a contributor, although you will hear her. But the one that you're going to hear prominently is Mary Catherine Hamm. Now, she's on CNN all the time, and I've seen her on Stephanopoulos and everything like that. This is a very, very attractive woman. 42 years old, brunette, long, sort of curly-ish hair. When she's on those shows, she doesn't wear a lot of makeup. She wears a lot of sleeveless outfits. She's got terrific shoulders and arms. Why do I bring this up? Well, it's no secret that you get somebody who looks like that on television, and especially the male population will screech to a halt and just see what the woman has to say. Come on, Fox News proves that every night. Teeth on this one. Next time she's on television, take a good look at her teeth. She smiles, and she looks like you're looking at Secretariat. Again, very attractive woman, and she wears very little makeup and doesn't do any of that sort of stuff when she's on during the day, and when she's on Stephanopoulos, and when she's on CNN. She's a regular contributor on CNN. But she showed up last Friday night wearing a black sleeveless, shoulderless top, wearing quite a bit more makeup, and just looking like $1 million in small, unmarked bills. Again, 42 years old, knockout babe. The problem is that when she's on Stephanopoulos on CNN, she sort of behaves herself. And I've never really seen her speak in the extreme. But she's on Friday night, and it's like, okay, rules are different. Put a little extra makeup on, bring out those guns. And now, this is an open forum. I'm going to say what I really think. And it turns out what she really thinks is dangerous. All right, enough of the setup. Here's some of what you heard on Friday night, and one of the reasons I made such a big deal out of it this week.
I mean, I saw the videos of people erupting in cheers that we don't have to wear a mask on the plane anymore. Now, there's also, you hear from the people will die crowd, and they're right, people will die. People will always die. I'm against people dying, but they're always going to die. And you actually can't stop it. And masks really, we're finding out a particularly ineffective way of stopping it.
Okay, right there. Right there. Says who? What he just said there is not true. Now, some masks work better than others, but everybody and their brother knows that the coronavirus is transmitted through droplets in the air when you speak or when you yell or when you sing or just talk. Those droplets are projected into the air, and if you inhale them, then you have a better chance of contracting the coronavirus. Conversely, since we know sometimes you have it before you know you have it, if you're wearing a mask and you are contagious and you don't know it yet, wearing a mask cuts down your chances of spreading those droplets. The word here is mitigate. It's mitigate. For some reason, people will not allow themselves to understand the concept of mitigation. My brother wore a mask and he got sick. Therefore, masks don't work. That's not what it means. That's not what it means. Because number one, maybe your brother prevented somebody else from getting it because he was wearing a mask. And also, nobody ever said that masks are 100% effective. Nobody has ever made that claim. Even the vaccines. Well, I got the vaccine and I got coronavirus, therefore vaccines don't work. That's not what that means. What do we hear? That, you know, in some cases, the coronavirus vaccine, 80% effective, 85%, 90% effective, whatever. All right, that leaves between 10 and 20% of people who got the vaccine, who might still get it. They've told you that from the beginning. And for him to go on national TV and say, well, we know now that masks don't work. Says who? You? Last time I checked, you do not have a medical background.
I just wish it didn't have to be political, because I see a lot of people now on the news saying, I'm still going to wear it. It just becomes a amulet and a symbol of your party. And it should just be about the science.
And now here's this Caitlin Flanagan from The Atlantic.
Well, it's a symbol of our stupidity that we would turn something like that into an amulet.
Right.
You know?
Yes. When I see young people walking alone outside with the mask, I want to punch them.
No.
I do.
Okay, right there, generally, we have agreement. There's no logical reason to be walking around outside with a mask on. But in all seriousness, how often have you seen anybody do that? I mean, really, when's the last time you saw somebody walking around outside with a mask on or driving in their car with a mask on? So this is one of those sort of straw man things where you're complaining about something that, for all intents and purposes, doesn't exist.
We're making PPE personal again. That's what we're doing.
PPE.
And it's personal protective equipment.
All right, stop right there. Bill Maher. For somebody who's claiming to sort of be an expert on this, but doesn't know what PPE stands for? And he clearly didn't. Anybody else see a credibility issue there?
The word was for the whole pandemic that your mask protects me and mine protects you. Okay, well, now the New York Times and other media outlets and public health officials are doing a thing that I call Now It Can Be Told, which is where they tell you the thing that right-wingers and open school advocates have been bitching about for 6 months is actually true, even though they were telling you it was misinformation
right
before.
Stop again. That's not what the New York Times said. The New York Times did a story. Let me get the date here. Hold on. On January 15th, 2022, it was a discussion of the effectiveness of different kinds of masks. We all know the N95 respirator one, they call it, gives you maximum protection, but there's a lot of people wearing cloth masks because, it's easier to carry around, and those don't work so well. And that's what the New York Times said. They didn't say that wearing a mask was no good. They said wearing some cloth masks that they probably shouldn't be selling anyhow because they don't provide enough protection, that those masks are no good. But for Mary Catherine Hamm to sit there on national TV and say the New York Times said something they never said, we continue.
So your mask, if you have a quality one, can protect you. And there is a limit to how long we can go before we modulate to a new form of living. We have new tools. We have knowledge about this virus. We have new ventilation systems, particularly planes are good. We know that masks are a minimally helpful tool, but we told a lot of people they were maximally helpful, and that was a bad idea, especially for the vulnerable.
Especially for the vulnerable. I cut that off. Okay, so nobody ever said that. Nobody has ever said that masks are minimally effective, because then that would seem to me to pose the obvious question, then what does give us maximum protection, if not masks, if not vaccines? So Mary Catherine, what should we have been doing all along? The social distancing, the hand washing, wear a mask, get the vaccine. That was Dr. Anthony Fauci's mantra for 2 years. It was always true. It's true now, or at least up until recently, because, you know, now we know that this thing is no longer really a pandemic. I dare use the word manageable, but at least it's to the point where we're no longer in a pandemic. But again, this gets back to this, well, it's either got to be left or right. No, it doesn't. It's mitigation is the word. I washed my hands. I socially distanced. I got the vaccine and I wear a mask and I got the coronavirus. Therefore, everybody's been lying to me. That's idiot logic. Nobody ever said you do all those things and you won't get sick. Nobody ever said that. Nobody ever insinuated it. You're trying to cut down your chances of contracting the virus by doing those four things. Here we go again.
But wouldn't they get it just when they said you don't have to wear it while you're eating?
Yes.
Wouldn't just that?
Well, because it's a practical issue. First of all, if you're in a restaurant, which I assume he's talking about, you're in a restaurant, they put the tables like 8 feet away from one another. Some people did plexiglass and took other measures like that. So now you're sitting there at your table. You have the recommended amount of distance, and now it's time to eat. Well, Bill, you can't put food in your mouth without removing your mask. So you're just playing dumb with us? Because that's sure what it looks like. Of course you have to take your mask off to be able to put food in your mouth. What? Because somebody said, well, you can take your mask off to eat. Now that nullifies everything we've heard about ways to try to keep from getting the damn virus? You're insulting our intelligence here. And that's what breaks my heart most of all, because Bill Maher used to do a show that sort of appealed to the American intelligence. It was an interesting mix between a public affairs show talking about politics and things like that and comedy, but it was sort of high-minded. You had to sort of know what was going on, and you had to have sort of a brain. Otherwise, the stuff that they were talking about on Real Time would have gone over your head. And that's what people liked about it. One of the main things people liked about it, it's like, oh, comedy shows don't have to just be, you know, somebody smashing pumpkins on stage or getting hit with a pie in the face. You can do a show that's got a lot of comedy, but it's smart. It's done smart. And this is an insult to my intelligence, what they did last Friday night on Real Time.
Or I see the basketball players playing, gouging each other's eyes out, and then they go to the bench and they put the mask on.
Yeah.
Saturday Night Live, they do the sketches, and then at the end when they say goodnight, they have the mask on. It's like, what world am I living in where people are not seeing this insanity?
Okay, again, agreement. The NBA thing doesn't make a lot of sense. But the Saturday Night Live thing, that's an incredibly popular show with incredibly popular people. Some people would argue that they're some of the coolest people on earth. And to do the curtain call at the end of the show with the masks on is sending a message. They see some responsibility in what they're doing. And it's sort of like, okay, here we are at the end of the show. Here we are, all these cool people on stage, but we're not so cool that we can't wear our masks. Of course, it's not, you know, to suggest that somehow you can do a 90-minute show breathing on each other, and at the end you put a mask on, and oh, look, I'm safe. They're sending a message, just the way that so many conservatives and Republicans were not wearing their masks in defiance of what the government, the CDC, was telling people that you should do. Similarly, the comedians who are on stage on Saturday Night Live, most of whom lean left, or in some cases are big liberals. That's their way of countering. It's language. Good night, everybody. And don't forget, we still have this health issue here. Don't forget to wear your mask. It couldn't be more obvious.
In the very, very beginning, even the CDC said, oh, you better not wear a mask because you'll trap the COVID close to your face and you'll die instantly that way.
Nobody ever said that. I defy you to produce a documentation of what she just said. It never happened. Okay? Let's just say, for the sake of discussion, she's making a joke, so she uses hyperbole for the purpose of emphasis. I do that all the time. But this is one thing that's just in my craw and has been for the entire 2 years. This is a major point here. A major point. Back when the pandemic first hit in March of 2020, Dr. Fauci went on TV and they started asking about masks. And he said, and keep in mind, we didn't have anything other than surgical masks and N95s back then. Now you got an entire industry. So you're talking about a period of time where the only masks that existed were medical grade masks, okay? And Fauci was on television. They asked him about wearing masks, and he said, I don't think that's necessary right now, or some words to that effect. He did that because behind the scenes, the medical community was very, very concerned with the possibility that if people got scared, and there was reason to believe they would, everybody would run out, buy up all those masks, and then the people in emergency rooms, the people in hospitals, the people who were working on these people who were dying left and right from the coronavirus at the very beginning, because we didn't even know what it was or how to stop it. They were afraid that there would be a run on surgical masks, and those people working in the hospitals who really, really need them wouldn't be able to get them. And people are like, Fauci lied and people died. And it's like, was it the truth? No. Was there a reason for him not telling the truth? Yes. Obviously. And for two years, that one comment from over 2 years ago, where Fauci was clearly trying to protect the stockpile of N95 and surgical masks in this country so the hospital people could have them, that one comment has been dredged up and used by every blabbermouth, from Ted Cruz to Donald Trump to Marjorie Taylor Greene to all the usual suspects. They keep dredging that up. They know exactly what they're doing. Did Dr. Fauci not tell the truth? Yes, he did not, for reasons that I just expressed. But the lie on top of what Fauci said is an attempt at misdirection and clearly untruthful in nature. Let's say the president, any president, finds out that a meteor is heading for Earth. You know, one just went by yesterday. Missed us by, you know, a couple of million miles or something, but in outer space terms, it was sort of a close call. All right, one of these days, one's going to probably pop up and be on a collision course with Earth. I don't know if it'll be in my lifetime or your lifetime. Might be another million years. I mean, who knows? But at some point, it's going to happen. But let's just say, for the sake of discussion, it's like that Adam McKay movie, Don't Look Up. They walk in, they tell the president, okay, we got an asteroid the size of the Empire State Building. It's headed for Earth, and it's not going to miss. Are Bill Maher and his two guests suggesting that the first thing that the president should do is go run on TV and say, we're all going to die. The thing's heading for us. That's what this logic implies. What would probably happen would be that they would have high-level meetings where they would basically say, okay, before we tell anybody about this, let's talk about it. Do we have any options? Is there anything we can do? How bad do we think it's going to be? Can we blow the thing up before it enters Earth's atmosphere? Let's get all this stuff straight before we go and we tell the world what we know. No, these people on Bill Maher's show, they want the president to go run on TV and just spill his guts about the whole thing, causing unnecessary widespread panic. This doesn't make any sense what these people are saying.
And I remember thinking, you know, because I've had cancer, and it's like whenever your counts are low, they say, oh, wear a mask, you'll be safer. And then they realized, oh, they were just lying. They were just trying to save the masks.
Oops.
You know, and it's, and then they're like, why have you lost faith in America's institutions?
See, and this dummy right here, she forgets to tell you that surgeons wear surgical masks all day. We've all heard about these operations where somebody's in surgery for like 16 hours or something. The surgeon, the anesthesiologist, everybody in the operating room, they're all wearing surgical masks. They're all, quote unquote, breathing their own carbon dioxide. And yet, not once has anybody ever produced any evidence that anybody who's worn a surgical mask that long has ever suffered in any way, shape, or form. Well, but somehow when you wear one outside of an operating room, I'm breathing my own CO2, I'm going to die. Nothing at all to support it. And by the way, there are no medical conditions where a doctor comes along and says, oh no, you can't wear a mask because of your medical condition. That has been debunked so many times. And people say, I have a medical exemption. Bullshit. You don't have anything. What you got is a doctor who probably just wanted to get you the fuck out of his office. So he wrote you a medical exemption. He knows you're crazy.
Well, because you lied to us at a really scary time, and we could have handled the truth.
You know what I find so sad? I was at the mall. The only people wearing masks were like 20. That's who is wearing the masks. The people least likely to die from it.
Right.
I feel like they have been indoctrinated in a way that...
The only people less likely are the toddlers, right?
Right.
Who we mask incessantly.
I don't even know what that means. Who we've masked incessantly. Again, I'm not saying this woman is not good, argumentatively speaking. She's just not very honest about things.
I know. I think at the beginning of the pandemic, the word was stay safe, stay home. Okay, well, that's a very simple public health message, but it actually discouraged and even demonized your rational risk analysis for yourself.
See, there again, there's an inflammatory word, demonized. This woman knows what she's doing. She's a very, very good arguer. Again, not just very honest. Now, if you want to pick that apart even further, what she was basically trying to say in a backwards way is, you don't have any medical background whatsoever, and yet, because you live in America and you insist on being, quote unquote, free, you should be able to override what the medical experts who study this stuff for a living are telling you in terms of ways to be safe, even though your way might endanger your health and the health of people around you. Okay, Mary Catherine.
Which is something that we have to be engaged in. We have to decide, okay, well, what is my risk level? Two-year-olds don't have the same risk level as 88-year-olds. That's just not true.
Mary Catherine, again, we're talking about the idea of infecting other people around you. We know how highly contagious some of these strains of the coronavirus have been. And the little kids go to school, and then they come home, and they get around grandma and grandpa. And even though the little kid doesn't get sick, grandma and grandpa get it. Again, this woman is lying by way of omission. She's just leaving stuff out that doesn't support her very narrow and incorrect view of what's going on.
Being indoors doesn't have the same risk level as being outdoors, but we did seemingly all the opposite things, which is get the kids out of school who are least vulnerable, hurt them that way.
Well, I'm not going to lie to you, and I'm going to agree with her in some regard that the kids were inconvenienced. I don't know that we, quote unquote, hurt them. Again, some of this stuff is very easy to comment on in hindsight. The CDC and other people involved in this stuff were telling you what they thought was right based on the information we had at the time. Remember when we were talking about, you know, spraying down vegetables and stuff like that before you ate them, and then we found out you don't really need to do that? Not that the CDC was lying to you. It's that we didn't know. You err on the side of caution. That's just human nature, or at least it's supposed to be.
Close the parks and the hiking trails, which is a thing that we did.
Here we go again. It's not that the parks and the hiking trails posed much risk to anybody, but it's the gathering places, the restrooms, the turnstiles, people standing in line for things, people using water fountains. The CDC was basically trying to cut back on close social
contact. Did they go overboard in some cases? Yeah, I think they did. But that doesn't prove your point, because you're leaving out one very important aspect to this whole equation, and I'll get to that in just a moment.
And then have indoor-outdoor spaces to eat that are actually just indoor again. Right. And you can take your mask off.
I mean, it's not trustworthy.
It's just, that's the problem in the end.
I don't know how a country this dumb can survive. When I saw the kids with the masks, all I could think of is anxiety. And yes. Then right on cue, I'm reading Jonathan Haidt's new article about why we have this levels of anxiety among teenagers that is just off the charts. Now, 44% of high school students said they felt sad or hopeless.
Oh, wait a minute now. Just wait a minute. Bill Maher, the guy who has never been married, never had kids, and shows nothing but open hostility for anybody under the age of 30, he's now going to start telling us what kids are thinking. Oh, this is just precious.
Now, a little perspective. All my year 17, I was sad and hopeless.
Yeah.
Because I got dumped. And, you know, when you're a kid, you don't see anything coming. And everything is the worst thing that could ever. So some of that is that.
Right.
When you're a teenager, you're going to be sad and hopeless at the time. But it also said a 40% increase in such feelings in the last 10 years. Also, I thought interesting, they were looking for the reasons why the kids, the CDC, is looking into this.
Yeah.
29% lost jobs. The parents lost jobs in the pandemic. So, you know, we haven't tallied up all those kind of negatives that went
public
into
health.
Yeah, well, sometimes bad things happen and people suffer. In one breath, he's like, people are always going to die. They're going to die. I hate when they die, but they're going to die. And in the next breath, he's telling you that people don't have to suffer. Well, which one is it, Bill? Talk to the kids in Ukraine. Those kids are suffering. Talk to all the impoverished kids in this country and around the world. Those kids are suffering. Bill Maher, the guy who has been preaching to us for decades that we're raising an entire country of pussies, now is going to try and convince us that he has some sort of empathy for the group he's been ridiculing for several decades? The fuck is going on?
There's a kind of health, too. And I think for adolescents, that's why I have a little leeway if they're 20 years old with the mask on. We really frightened these kids, yes, and we took a lot away from them. And they really were living at 14, 15 years old with this idea that they might die and their parents might die.
Yes, and a lot of them did, and a lot more would have if people didn't get the vaccine and wear the fucking mask.
And they were completely isolated. And I think we've kind of put a deep... There's a whole generation that we're going to have to look out for a little bit because we did something pretty terrible to them.
I have an idea. The schools were closed for a motherfucking year in all the major blue cities.
Oh, she's good. She is good. I'm telling you, she just omitted the fact that the schools were closed everywhere. It wasn't just blue cities. You see what she's doing here? You know, back when I was in college, we used to do these things called content analyses. You would take somebody's speech and you would basically pick it apart and you'd find all the discrepancies and all the holes in the argument. I'd have to go to Office Max and get an entire stack of notepads and a box of pens to keep track of everything she's lying about. It's lying through omission. The schools were closed in all the blue cities. Yeah, and in all the red cities, too.
They were closed for a year to in-person learning. Kids lost structure. They lost friends. They lost all their extracurriculars, sports, things that made them healthier, places of worship, things they could do with their family. They lost all those things. And they were told, even though they were super low risk, that they were either in danger of dying or in danger of killing their grandmas, and they probably shouldn't complain about it because right, that would make them selfish grandma killers. That is a very, very bad message for children, and it hurt a lot of them.
Also, it bothers me because it's fake.
Yeah, and as I said, through omission, they're leaving out one tiny little small fact, and that is by washing our hands, maintaining social distance, getting the vaccine and wearing the masks, after 2 years of that, as the numbers finally increase to the point where those mitigating elements could be effective, it all worked. We lost a million people. Could have been a fraction of that if people had acted more seriously about this, reacted more seriously, and got the shots and wore their masks instead of waving Tea Party flags and saying that your freedom was being encroached by being asked to wear a mask so you yourself didn't get sick and didn't get anybody else sick. Oh, and by the way, regarding the vaccine, I made this point on the podcast a couple of months ago. I just want to repeat this. For people who were in that QAnon gang and insisting that there's some sort of microchip in the vaccine, how would that have worked? Just from a practical standpoint, somebody who supports the idea that Bill Gates or somebody else in the government, whatever, was putting computer chips in there and, you know, you get the vaccine and now they can track you and control you or do whatever. How would that work? Is the vial with the vaccine in it, is that full of chips? If it is, how are the chips drawn into the syringe? Or maybe the chip is already in the syringe. How does the chip get out of the syringe? Did you ever see the passageway in a needle amplified like 600 times? It would have to be a computer chip the size of a flea's left nut to be able to go through the vial, through the syringe, and into your body. This is how stupid some of this stuff is. Oh, maybe the chips are in the vial. Okay, you stick the needle into the vial, you draw out the vaccine. What if you draw out more than one chip? And again, how little does that chip have? This is. I'm not going to even do this anymore. But here's the thing. What you saw on Bill Maher last Friday night was an example of nothing more than Monday morning quarterbacking. Here it is, the pandemic now, sort of semi-quasi over. And a bunch of people standing there going, well, here's what should have happened. It's like a reporter after a football game saying, okay, coach, you won today's game 10 to nothing, but you know, it should have been 15 to nothing if you had just done this. And all of this stuff on what has allegedly been a gathering place of liberals. So maybe now it's easier to understand why people who are not liberals and watching Fox and Newsmax and OAN and hanging around all those websites with all those QAnon people, the more of those people we have, the more the problem is amplified. Because if what you just listened to for the last half hour is on the liberal side of things, I mean, the whole thing just makes me shudder. I don't know, maybe as the final glancing blow of this whole discussion, 48% of Americans say they will continue to wear masks on public transportation. 24% will not, 11% not sure. 17% say they don't use public transportation, so they don't count. People under the age of 45 are more likely to wear masks than older folks, and those in the Midwest most likely to say they are not wearing masks.
We're also testing disinfectants readily available. We've tested bleach. We've tested isopropyl alcohol. I can tell you that bleach will kill the virus in 5 minutes, and that's with no manipulation.
So supposedly hit the body. I see the disinfectant. Supposedly hit the body with tremendous ultraviolet. Supposedly hit the body. I see the disinfectant. Supposedly hit the body with tremendous ultraviolet. We're leading the way in so many different ways. Supposing it brought the light inside the body in some other ways. As we continue to develop potential therapies, I see the disinfectant. I see the disinfectant. I think people are going to know. You're going to know. I'm going to know. I think people are going to know. You're going to know. I'm going to know. I think people are going to know. I see the disinfectant. This whole curse, this whole plague. And is there a way we can do something like that? Injection. Supposedly hit the body. I see the disinfectant. Supposedly hit the body with tremendous ultraviolet. Supposedly hit the body. I see the disinfectant. Supposedly hit the body with tremendous ultraviolet.
How about that, oldie but goodie? And with that, we say bye-bye for the week, the Friday, April 29th, 2022 edition of the J.C. Quarkman Podcast. Here at jcontheline.com is in the can. You got an extra 15 or 20 minutes out of me here today. 202 days remaining in our American democratic system as we have known it. We are here every weekday morning right about 7 o'clock, absolutely free. If you miss a podcast, don't worry. You can binge on the weekend, whatever. Everything is archived right here on the website. Email me, JC at JCOnTheLine.com. Facebook, The Showgram with JC Quarkman. We're in the top 10 of all podcasts in the country. Let's keep it that way. Spread the word. Let everybody know that we are here each weekday morning. Have yourself a great weekend. Stay dry. In the meantime, we've beaten this one to death. Have a good one. See you later. Bye.
The JC Quarkman Podcast.